Paul Kitney is with us. He is chief strategist at Daiwa Capital Markets in the studio in Hong Kong. Paul, always a pleasure. It's interesting. Brian made an interesting point earlier talking about the divergence. Here we heard from the Fed today. Yes, they didn't hike rates, but they're clearly on this path for future tightening. At the same time, the Reserve Bank of Australia, through its quarterly monetary policy statement, really doesn't see a strong case for near-term adjustment in that official cash rate. Does this kind of underscore the problem globally in terms of monetary policy?
So I think the cases for the U.S. and Australia are actually somewhat different.
In the case, but you're applying tension across the system. You've got these kind of polar opposites.
Yeah, but the decision-making process for Australia, which has a housing bubble that it needs to deal with, and it has to balance that against also fragility in the financial system, are very different to what we're seeing in the United States. And the considerations for macro prudential supervision in Australia versus the US. So let me deal with the US first. So as far as the US is concerned, I think, we are still on a gradual path of normalization. We're most likely to see a 25 basis point hike next month and 2 to 3 hikes next year, unless we have some sort of negative or positive shock. Now, the Fed is giving itself flexibility for both of those eventualities. Now, a few weeks ago, Powell mentioned that he may go beyond neutral if necessary. I think also is that if the trade war actually does extend, then they're also giving themselves flexibility to actually go easy on that path of normalization. Now, Australia has a tricky central banking monetary policy decision-making framework, because we have in Australia quite a significantly overvalued property market. We've also got household debt that's much worse than the United States. And at the same time, we've got a banking system that is being strained by that in particular. So decisions to cut rates and re-stimulate that bubble is a concern for the Reserve Bank of Australia, while at the same time raising rates is a concern for not wanting to actually end it in a disorderly fashion. So I see the two as being slightly different.
Just very quickly, we are going to come back more to this, but when you look at some of the shocks you mentioned there, what is a major shock to you? Is it the trade war or is it this steeper Fed path? Just quickly.
It's a trade war. It's a trade war. Yeah. So is that quick enough for you?
That was very quick. Thank you.
All right.
So, it's a trade war. Look, what's hurting equity markets, particularly in emerging markets globally, in my opinion, is actually not rate rises. It's a dollar.
When you look at markets, you're still saying that you would like to gradually add to Hong Kong and China, even though we know that there is still some risk out there. Is that because the valuations are so low?
Right. So just to qualify that view, I think as we get into what we consider the value zone, which we think we're at least 7% away, we'll be looking in a baby steps manner to start increasing our exposure there. So we've done quite a bit of work on valuations. Yes, they're cheap relative to history. But when we look at, sort of previous sort of trough valuations, looking at, historic levels, looking at the post-GFC low valuation, which is about 7% below where we are right now. We have a worst case scenario, which is about 14%. So as we get towards that level and certainly within that range, and I think the trade war will drive this through the dollar, as I mentioned before, then we'd look to add exposure. Of course, if it starts to look like that a deal is going to be done, or at least a ceasefire on trade is likely, then we'd be looking to do exactly the same.
So handicap those odds for me. I mean, given the fact that the midterm elections here in the States favored the Democrats, they've got control of the House of Representatives. President Trump appears to be, I don't want to say he's on the back foot, but certainly he's got things he should be concerned about. We've got a meeting between the two presidents, Trump and Xi, at the end of the month. Do things begin to shift in a more positive direction, let's say, at this point or at the end of the month?
So from Xi's perspective, all the incentives are there for him to want to negotiate this out. The impact of an extended trade war is much greater for China than it is for the United States. Now that the midterms are over, Trump's not in as much of a hurry in order to get this done. So I think the risk is that it takes a little bit longer in order for there to be some form of ceasefire. However, I don't think the bar is terribly high So when we look at, you know, the renegotiated terms in NAFTA, for example, we've seen a marginal improvement in the terms of trade there for the United States, and I don't think it will take that much, but I think it may take a little bit longer than November 30, December 1st on G20.
And so a potential ceasefire could signal a little bit of an end to this dollar strength, which could be good for EMs. You talked China, you talked Hong Kong. What else do you like? Do you like India, for example?
Right. So all year, we've been overweight India within Asia ex Japan as a type of non-correlated bet. So the Indian growth profile is not really driven by the global trade cycle. And we've had that as a bit of ballast in our severe portfolio selection. We also like earnings growth there, which are pushing 20%. There is a valuation premium, but given the fact that the growth is not correlated with the trade cycle, it's deserved. And also inflation, despite the weak rupee, is maintained, has actually been drifting lower. In fact, as of September, it was actually just a touch below 4%.
So the assets right now that you would avoid like the plague are what?
Twin deficit emerging markets.
Right. Can you elaborate a little bit? Give me some specific examples.
Sure. Well, I don't cover global EM, but the type of markets that I would avoid there would be Turkey, Brazil, Argentina. In the context of the Asia Pacific, the big twin deficit countries that are not seeing important improvements in those twin deficits are the Philippines and also Indonesia, both of which were underweight.
And just very quickly, you've got some top picks as well, including AIA Group.
Yes, we like AIA. AIA has remarkable margins. You know, their VNB margins in China are something in the order of 80%. They do trade at a significant premium. It's a stock that I've sort of put in that growth at a reasonable price category that I'd want to own for 5 years.